Hi, everyone. This is the B Team, and we're here on Stutter Talk. Sorry, I'm a little out of practice. I can't remember how to start the show. But this is Stutter Talk episode 587 for July 24th, 2016. I am co-host Joel Cordy, and I'm here with Karen Herring.
Hey, guys.
And Roisin McManus.
Hey, everyone.
And it has been a super long time since we all chatted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even want to do the thing where we think about when the last was.
No, I think it's really long.
Outrageous amount of time.
I had a number of people approach me at the conference and be like, I love the B Team, and where are you guys? What is happening? Why aren't you recording? And I was like,
Where is the B Team?
I feel like that's such a nice thing to hear, and also really sad.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, we're gonna record eventually soon. Sorry.
Yeah. Whose fault is it? I feel like it's 70% my fault.
I don't know.
Joel. No, I think it's
everyone just swamped.
60% my fault.
I think maybe 40% your fault.
Okay.
30%. Yeah.
More definitely, it's definitely more my fault than your guys' fault. Because
I don't know.
No, you guys have been. Well, you guys recorded a show without me, so that just goes to show right there.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm happy that we all have personalities where it doesn't. We're both equally capable of flaking out. Mm-hmm. So it kind of creates a nice understanding amongst the three of us.
I just can't believe that we haven't had any technical difficulties with the show yet. Because usually when we start recording, it takes a half an hour to sort of, I don't know. And I haven't recorded forever on my computer, so I just assumed, there's going to be some update with Skype and things aren't going to work.
Mm.
So things seem to be working.
Love it.
All right. Anyway, I was just kind of burping into the microphone there.
Ew.
Gosh, I'm really bad at podcasting all of a
this
sudden.
This is a mess.
This is a hot mess.
My
Peter,
God.
Peter's,
battle.
Peter's going to be editing this show today. And, if he wants to make it a professional sounding show, good
He'll
luck.
He'll have to cut everything out.
Yeah.
We'll just be like, hi, guys. All right, bye.
So we were just, we went through this long, arduous process of planning the show where Roisin was running a little bit late because of her job, and we were texting for about 20 minutes before we started recording here. So that's quite the plan, I would say, for us.
It's true.
Yeah, and we found out that there's a lot to talk about, but we're going to start out and just give a quick little update on what all of us have been up to. And since I'm talking right now, I guess I'll just start and continue to talk.
Sounds good.
So the reason why I've been so MIA is pretty simple. As some of the listeners might be aware, I had a kid about 18 months ago. So that takes a lot of my time. But the other thing is the business that I started is really growing a lot and just takes up a lot of my time. And those two things, father, husband, and or three things, father, husband, and business have really just been my life, I guess. And I guess that's normal. So that's fine. But that's pretty much, that's kind of what's been happening in a nutshell. As far as stuttering is concerned, kind of feel like things have been, have kind of normalized out for me pretty recently here. But a week or so ago, I went through about a 2-week period where I was stuttering with a good deal of struggle, but that I just became aware of, but that seems to kind of have waned a little bit. But I would say I can confidently say that I think my thinking about stuttering and awareness of stuttering is at an all-time low. That's I hardly like, think about it at all, which is weird.
Well,
but I still stutter a lot. I just don't really think about it.
That is really, really cool, Joel.
Yeah, it's. I don't know if it's cool.
I think it's cool.
I guess I just have other things that are, I don't want to say more interesting, but they're just more pressing. Mm-hmm. You know?
Do you think, like, I don't know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago, you would have ever thought that you would be in that, in the place that you're in now?
No, but I definitely, there hasn't been like a reduction in stress in my life. Actually, the last few months have been some of the most stressful in my life because of business related stuff. And it's just so weird that 0% of that is because of stuttering. It's so weird. But you wouldn't have been able to convince me that when I was 23 or younger, and really any time of my stuttering life prior to like 24 or 25 years old, that at 32 years old, that stuttering would just have an extremely small impact on my life. Like, you just couldn't convince me of that, especially with the level that I stutter at. I mean, it's not like I don't stutter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was 2 weeks ago just stuttering up a storm, you know, and it was like a little frustrating, but it's just like, you know, after you've been through that roller coaster, if you've like ridden the same roller coaster like 5,000 times, it becomes a little less evocative, you know. It's like, oh, okay.
I love that.
I like that.
Yes.
You're like, this ride is not interesting or fun or scary anymore.
It's a ride, yeah.
Or an enjoyable. It's just a ride.
All right, so that's me. I want to hear about you guys, though, because we haven't talked forever.
Yeah. I can go next.
All right,
cool. So I'm Roisin, as I said earlier. I've had kind of a really busy year, and especially the last 6 months. I graduated from my master's program, which has been, I graduated, but I had one more course. So I'm actually done next Tuesday. So it's happening. It's very, very, very real. After being in school for like 5.5 years. So it's really cool to have that kind of be finishing up, but it was a very stressful year of, a lot of different clinical rotations, meeting new people, being an amateur in a lot of different environments. And then on top of that, we've kind of like ramped up our stuttering sort of actions in New York in the past year or so. So that's also been keeping me very, very busy in the form of the conference that we did, which we talked ad nauseum about in the show, so we don't have to talk about that anymore. And the NSA conference, which just happened in Atlanta, that I helped out with the program for the 20-somethings. And I'm sure that we'll kind of touch on that stuff later on. But so I think I'm at a place in my life right now where I'm kind of utterly exhausted, not necessarily in a bad way, but I'm definitely gearing up for the next like 3 or 4 months to step back from things, and sort of like get in touch with myself again, because I feel like I've been, especially in the stuttering world, like giving a lot and not really even thinking about where I'm kind of at. So in terms of stuttering, I've been thinking a lot about stuttering, but not in a personal sense at all. Like when it comes to my job, when it comes to my daily life, I just feel like I don't have the emotional capital to like waste on like thinking about my stuttering. I'm thinking about like organizing things and mentoring people and like all these different things. So I think I'm kind of in a similar place to Joel. Well, that like,
except that you actually like give people things.
Well, you're certainly giving your son something,
I guess.
So Yeah, it's interesting when I'm focusing a lot on stuttering in a more like community-based activist way, as opposed to like my personal growth. I know that those two things happen side by side, but I think it's a really interesting way to help for people who stutter to kind of grow in that way. And I've seen it in a number of people in our New York community who have kind of newcomers who we've pulled into this, like, help us do this, help us plan this, you know, help us be a leader. Do you want to be a chapter leader? Sort of. And I've seen them grow in that way too. So it's kind of interesting. But yeah, that's me.
Rad.
Me. I don't know. I don't feel like I'm in quite as positive of a place as you both are right now. And I'm trying to think if it's just like right now and it's hard to like reflect back on the great things that are going on. Because stuttering has just been really, really hard the last, maybe the last month or two. But for the, I guess, the listeners that don't know, I moved to Pittsburgh about a year ago to pursue my PhD in speech. And a lot of just changes going on in my life about that I moved and that I left my job and that I'm in school again. I also think it's been, I don't think I realized when I was in New York what a big part, sort of like the support still helped me. I think I felt like I was in a good place with my speech and the way that I felt. And I think I took for granted that I got to see a lot of adults who stutter who I look up to. And I think stepping back from that has been more difficult than I thought it would be. Yeah, so I feel like I'm able to relate more now than maybe I was last year to other people who stutter who don't really have that support, because I think it can be really, really hard. And I think it's I don't know, I'm like super impressed by both of you and a little bit envious, because I think stuttering is definitely affecting me more now than it has in the past, and it's not fun.
How is it affecting you?
I think I'm definitely more, when I am stuttering, I'm feeling more out of control than I have in the past, and feeling like, yeah, I guess out of control is the best way to put it. But when I'm feeling out of control, not being able just to sort of ride it out, but definitely panicking more. And I then think that then that sort of feeds in to then I'm more out of control, then I freak out more. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's affecting me in the way, like, I'm still doing what I need to do. Actually, today was the last day of the graduate course that I taught, which was really fun and really great. Like, I'm definitely, it's not affecting my life in the sense that I'm not doing the things that I want and need to do, but taking more of an emotional toll of just like, it's hard to talk.
I think you guys, it sounds like you have, and Roisin too, you have to talk a lot, you know? You're teaching a class. I think if you had my job, I don't really know why I'm saying this, but maybe you would have a hard day and you wouldn't even know, because like you said 10 sentences that day. So that might be part of it too. Is like, yeah. Maybe there would be one day where if I was in another context with another job, I would have really struggled and had a tough day. But because of the nature of my job, it's not an experience that I had. And it sounds like I'm advocating, like, for people not to challenge themselves, and I'm not at all. I guess I'm just trying to put your life in a certain context, I guess.
Yeah. Karen, I also I'm just going to ask this. Do you have a harder time or a more frustrating or more emotional time speaking in the context of like the academic, like SLP environment where there's a lot of focus on speech versus like the being like social, like out at a restaurant or out at a bar?
Huh. You know, I'm not really sure. I haven't really thought about it a ton. I think it probably bothers me more when I'm trying to like explain a point rather than just like hanging out. But I'm not positive if like I'm actually stuttering more than or not. I mean, I'm not really sure though.
Oh, Roisin, that's such a great question. I mean, sorry, it's just like really resonating with me because the one time I actually have been self-conscious about my stuttering recently is I was out to dinner with this other adult who stutters, who's this like really successful guy and a few other speech language pathology professionals and like his wife and stuff. And I felt pressure to, and that's when I was struggling a lot. So then I felt, it was like, I feel stupid about stuttering. I remember thinking that and then thinking, you know, this is ridiculous. I shouldn't feel stupid. But in an environment where you'd think that maybe I should feel more comfortable, I actually was like way more self-conscious about it. So I think there's something to be said about that.
Yeah. Mm.
Whereas like if I have to make some work related phone call or something, I don't care what they think, but it's weird how basically, yes. Okay. Sorry for talking more. You go now.
No, that's really, and I never really thought about it, but like when I'm at my job, say in the hospital, in the ER, and I'm having a bad day, like how I've sort of like organized my role there is that I'm kind of the expert on my stuttering. And because I'm kind of positioning myself in that way, people know that. And if I'm having a hard day, like, I don't think about like if other people are thinking like, oh, like she should be doing this or she could have a little more control there. Or how come she doesn't have, like, I just, even if they were thinking that, which they're not, like, it just wouldn't even, like, I just consider myself the expert on my own stuttering in that environment. But I would imagine if I was pursuing an academic degree or teaching or, and I don't know if it's true, but even though some people say that that's more of an accepting environment, for me, I think I would feel like, what is that person thinking? What, and does this person think that like they know better than me and they have techniques that I should be doing? And it would sort of get in my head a little bit.
It shouldn't, but it's so weird. It's counterintuitive, but I think there's something to be said about that. You're just around it all the time. And especially if you're around people who know a lot about stuttering, and even though that they know that the disorder varies, it's still, I could see how it could be challenging and that you might think about it more than you otherwise would.
Yeah.
Basically, Karen has the hardest job.
And she's just beginning. Just
okay. Ay, ay, ay.
No, but you're also in a position of being like a learner, but you're also having to teach. You're in this weird, getting your PhD is this interesting position where you don't, I don't know, you could speak on this, but you might not feel like you really have like your feet on the ground yet, but then you're also teaching.
Yeah, it's for sure like a very weird thing. I mean, it's also just weird to because I feel like I wasn't in graduate school like that long ago. And while I feel like I'm prepared to teach, it is like a very weird thing because the graduate students are like pretty close to my age.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Because you're so smart.
I remember a long time ago, Karen, when you and I did a stutter talk together with, this was a long time ago, but we had a contest that was like the battle of the graduate students, and you knew all of the answers to the questions they asked. And then I was like, man, maybe I actually don't know that much about stuttering, because you just like,
oh, no.
As I remember, you won handily, as I remember. But then, I don't know, it's interesting, I guess, because like I think, well, if I had to teach a stuttering class, that I would know how to do that. But still, to this day, if someone, and this is like the most common question that I get from like random friends, is they'll say like, oh, you know, I have a nephew who stutters, and you know, he's 3 years old, and what should I do? And yeah. I'm always like, I'm not really sure. I always have to like, I'm always like trying to, maybe that should be a stutter talk episode. I usually send them, I'll have to look the last time it happened, like what I said, but it's weird. It's weird with stuttering in my personal journey, where even though I feel like I know a lot and way more than most people do, there's still a lot of areas where I just don't know very much. So I guess what I'm saying is, I imagine that teaching a class on stuttering isn't necessarily the easiest thing.
Yeah. I also think that like that could be like, I would assume that also happens to people who stutter who are not SLPs, that like if someone hears them talk to talking, and that they know someone else that might need help, that is almost assumed that the person who stutters like knows all.
Yeah.
Which can be
all the time.
Yeah. That can be a hard thing, particularly because like people who stutter might know a lot about what's helped them.
Yep.
But not necessarily what's going to help like some really young kid.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
It's hard.
Like, yeah, I would say that just puts like a lot of responsibility on all people who stutter.
This is how we talk about the conference a bit.
Let's do it.
Promising people a post-conference debrief.
Let's do it.
But it's, now it's been like two weeks, but
who cares?
So the World Congress of People Who Stutter and the National Stuttering Association had a joint conference in Atlanta in early July. And I was there, and Karen was also there. Joel, unfortunately, couldn't make it, and we missed you, Joel, as always.
Yeah, I was bummed. I saw all the activity on the Instagrams and the Facebooks, and I was jealous.
The Facebooks. It was fun. I think this year was a really like robust year of workshops. Could you agree with that, Karen?
Yeah, I think there were a lot of workshops that were just like new. Yeah. Like we hadn't really done before, and a lot of fresh ideas,
mm-hmm.
which is cool.
Yeah.
Just one question real quick. As far as like the turnout overall, was it higher because of, you know, the NSA and this sort of joining forces with someone else? Or what was that? What was that like?
So the turnout for the whole conference was, I think, in the mid to high 800s, and it's usually around 700 or 800. So it actually wasn't too much larger. And it was a joint with the NSA and the International Stuttering Association, or the ISA. And the ISA is basically made up of all these different national organizations, associations. I think this year, I think because of the price of getting across the ocean, and then like the political and economic stuff happening kind of all over the world, and a lot of people had a hard time getting visas, apparently.
Oh.
I think there was only like around 150 international people. I might be wrong about that, but I think it was not a huge number. But some people from Western Europe, Russia, that there was a small group from Cameroon and Gambia, some people from China, Japan. But I think predominantly like your European countries. So it was definitely an interesting, it was wonderful to have them there, but it wasn't a huge faction of the crowd. And I'm sure that there's like a lot of stories and politics behind that, but yeah. So it was a good size. It didn't feel too different from an NSA, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there were, like Karen was saying, there were just more workshops about Chris and Emma, Chris Constantino and Emma Alpern did their workshop about disability rights and kind of the history of disability rights and what we can learn from that movement, which was really interesting. There was a workshop by Michael Boyle about reducing stigma, and he presented research on like the most effective ways to reduce stigma.
Cool.
Which was interesting. And I think that the sort of the evidence was that personal stories are the most effective way when you factor in like mass media stuff or protests or that kind of thing. Those are effective, but people hearing personal stories was the most effective.
Interesting.
Yeah. Karen, did you have any like workshops or moments that were like, you know, particularly special to you?
Yeah, I think there were a few. I went to the research symposium the 2 days before the NSA, and I enjoyed that like a lot. Just a lot of really, really interesting talks about desensitization and changing how clients like think and how they feel. Just a lot of, I mean, like interesting stuff that I want to do more stuff in. But just a lot of new ideas about sort of like how desensitization can be done.
I just wanted to ask, Karen, what would it be an example of a way to do desensitization that you really hadn't considered before?
So the person that gave the talk wasn't a SLP. So a lot of the desensitization that she did was more for like overall fears or phobias.
Okay.
But I do think that it can relate more than I did before. So a lot of the desensitization things that she sort of threw out there were non-speech tasks, but ideally still addressing like the underlying fear that someone might have. So like she gave the example, like if someone has the fear that because they stutter, they're going to take up too much time, or they're going to waste someone's time, so they like shouldn't talk. Like confronting the fear of taking up too much time, or confronting the fear of time pressure by like going into a store and paying for your things in pennies. And just counting them all out and just having the person wait and having everyone in the line wait, which I thought was just like such an interesting idea because it doesn't seem to do with speech, but I do think that it kind of addresses the same thing.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I just like really, it just made me think like a lot about like how maybe the speech tasks we're having people do are too narrow and we need to be like addressing the fear that like that underlies them more.
Hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that kind of speaks to the whole like.
I would like to be at that one. Cool.
Yeah. That kind of speaks to the whole like why the AIS does like the subway challenge where you get on a train and you announce that you stutter. Because the train, most of the time, the people can't even hear what you're saying. And you're just, it's more the act of just getting up in front of a crowd and kind of doing something that, that feels to you like out of the norm, as opposed to the actual act of stuttering. And that, at least for me, it was more about just that act of standing up and speaking on the train.
Yeah. Which I think before I heard this talk, I never truly understood why getting up on a subway car and announcing to the train that you stutter like would help. Like it just seemed like a task that we're asking people to do, but like I couldn't really connect those dots until I heard this talk, and then I was like, oh. All makes sense now. I took a lot away from that, for sure. What about you?
I could talk about the things that we're talking about over text before the show, which is that I helped facilitate a workshop with Hayden Lampert for the 20-somethings called Disordered or Just Different. And it was not to really, the goal was just to kind of get a conversation going and see where people's thoughts are about like stuttering being like a medical or neurological disorder versus a different way of speaking or both. And what happened, so it was a 9 a.m. workshop, so it was smaller because it was like Saturday morning, 9 a.m., the 20-somethings were all hungover. And then we're looking at the day at a glance, and then we look at the teens, all these young, like maybe like 10-year-olds, like 11, 12, start coming in, and we're like, what are all these kids doing here?
Oh.
And then we look at the day at a glance, and the teens and the tweens had been directed to come to ours, which I remember Tammy saying something like, oh, are yours appropriate for teens? And I was like, yeah, sure, but we didn't talk about specifics.
Interesting.
So we were kind of like, oh man, is this like above their heads? Are they going to be like, is this going to like be harmful for them? Are they going to, is this like too radical? Like we were kind of like, had like a moment of panic, Hayden and I. And we're like, you know, we're just going to go ahead because usually kids are smarter than like all of us anyway. So, so we kind of presented, you know, we presented the definition of disorder, asked them to define it, and then difference, asked them to define it. And then we asked for a little bit of discussion about stuttering and then a show of hands just before we even start the conversation, like who like sees their stuttering as a disorder. It was kind of one half the room was all the teens and the tweens, and the other half was all like the 20-somethings and 30-somethings and a few older people. And like almost all the 20-somethings and older folks raised their hands. And then when we said difference, like the whole other side of the room, all the kids, the teens and the tweens raised their hands. And we all laughed. We're like, whoa. It was really interesting. And then that sort of like sparked a conversation of like, whoa, what's that all about? And a lot of, there was one, I think this girl was like 13. There's a two or three of the teens that were like really, really thoughtful and able to articulate where they were coming from. And she was, a lot of them have been coming to the NSA for a long time, which is interesting. So they've like integrated, have learned and have been supported into integrating stuttering just into a part of who they are. And like not to pathologize it in themselves and to like tell their teachers about it and tell their students about it, that this is stuttering, this is what I do, here's how to respond to me. So they have been sent a message for a long time of like, you know, this is just the who you are. And they were kind of like, one girl was like, I think she was 13. She's like, I've been to so many speech therapists. I've tried so many things, so many tricks. And then one day I woke up and I realized like, I'm not going to be able to have any hope or have any optimism. She said that word, like optimism for the future. If I'm just trying to fix it, I just can't, like, it's just who I am.
Wow.
And then on the other side of the room, one of the 20-something thing is like, he said something like, I think it's a very dangerous way of looking at it. So like he had, no, people were, it was a really good back and forth. And a lot of the older young adults were like, they hadn't come to the NSA when they were kids. And they were saying how, you know, when you're young, you might be able to have the like naivete that it's not a disorder. And then you hit the real world and basically you face discrimination. And then you learn, you realize that it is a disorder. And we sort of deconstructed that, like, so is that a disorder or is it just like society can't handle our difference? Like if it only becomes a disorder when we're discriminated against, and then it becomes harder, is that a medical disorder or is that a stigmatized difference? I mean, I remember being a teen and being miserable, more miserable than I am now. So it was really interesting conversation, and it showed like, and then one of them even maybe a young, like an 18-year-old who's, he didn't stutter, his sister stuttered. And he was like, I've never seen this as a disorder or something wrong with her brain. It's just, she's different. And then he even said, but like our generation thinks it's kind of silly to like put labels on things like straight, gay, male, female. Like it just kind of like, it doesn't, like they were all kind of like, it was really interesting. So that was kind of my most, it wasn't like a wonderful moment, but we had a great conversation. Just, there was no like, this is the way it is, or this is the answer. It was just like a very nuanced conversation where everybody was chiming in. And then I walked away thinking like, that's really interesting. And it's really not black and white.
Yeah. I feel like I still can't decide even what I think. Like I could see both sides. And there's certain times that I'm more agreeing with one side, and then I sort of flip flop. Yeah, yeah, I just don't know.
I think, I mean, what we kind of, the only conclusion that we kind of came to as a group was that, because you heard from all different parties in the room, there were definitely people where their relationship to the way that they speak and the way they communicate becomes disordered. In the sense that like you're afraid to pick up the phone, you're afraid to speak, you're avoiding things. Like that's not exactly.
Oh, like to me, that is more a difference between a disability and a disorder. Like to me, a disorder and a difference doesn't have anything to do with how much it gets in your way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and disability was definitely like the elephant in the room that kept popping up, and we weren't really sure where it fit in. But not to say that, no, well, I mean, disability. So if you're terrified to pick up the phone, are you unable to pick up the phone, or do you need like some therapy to help you pick up the phone?
Well, yeah, but if you need help to pick up the phone, then like at that time, you can't pick up the phone, right?
And the help is like the accommodation that you need.
Then there's also like, I mean, I don't know enough about this to really stick up for it or feel confident that I'm saying the right things. But my understanding is that there's also a difference between a disability and a handicap.
That's on complete uncharted territory for me.
Yeah.
Definitely uncharted for me.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying listening to you guys talk about it.
Yeah.
I don't have an opinion really.
Just to kind of, so when I said that the whole like disordered reaction thing, like I guess the end, the where we sort of left off was like, it might be harmful to tell someone who is able to cope with this way of speaking and able to, a kid especially, whose kids are so sensitive to language, like being told they have a problem.
Hmm.
They're so sensitive to that, like who has the right to decide that the way my brain works, because my speech comes out differently, and I have learned or had the right enough help and enough support and enough like of my own thoughts to become okay with it. Who can say to me that like I have a disorder?
Yeah.
But then someone who really is really struggling and having a really hard time, who can say to them like, this is just who you are, so accept it. Like you don't have a disorder. Like it's just not black and white. And really it's the power should kind of rest in our hands. But then that becomes hard in terms of like the DSM and insurance, and that was a whole different thing. But
yeah.
But I think it's worth talking about.
Interesting stuff. Yeah.
I feel like as I'm getting older, I see almost maybe everything in terms of a spectrum.
Yeah.
So it's like you could pick out individual people who are part of a group who stutter, and you could say, you know, well, for them, it's a disorder because of X, Y, and Z, but then someone else... it's just not the case for.
Mm.
And it's so hard to just generalize on anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then you also like pulled in the piece of like, it also really depends on how society views it. So it's not necessarily even how the person feels or how it is or isn't affecting them. But if it doesn't fit into what the norm is, then I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And that's a bigger question of like when we say hypertension is a disorder because, well, it's a disease, I guess, because it can kill you, versus like homosexuality was seen as a disorder for a long time because it was just so deviant from the norm. That was like rigidly enforced that people couldn't openly be homosexual and survive. And so it was seen as a disorder, but that obviously is not static.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It for sure is.
But I was so, it gave me so much like I was so happy that the teens not only like were able to have this conversation, but like led this conversation.
It's very, very cool.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is good. It'd have been good things.
I know we don't have a ton of time left, but I also want to hear what Joel was going to bring up, because that sounds pretty intense.
Well, I'll do sort of a quick summary, because there's really not that too much or that much to this story, and you guys can comment on it. But it actually is an interesting how this conversation has kind of flowed, because I feel like we're kind of segueing right into it.
Perfect.
You know, with these concepts and, you know, the perceptions of the public and everything. But anyway, I recently went to this trade show in Nashville. Chase Bliss Audio, my company, set up a booth, and early on in the trade show, this woman came over, and it was actually a woman that I've talked to before. She was in public relations, and she wrote this article one time for this thing, and she had heard my name from someone and talked to me about the music industry and included a quote of mine in this article. So we knew each other a little bit, and she came up to the booth. And actually, I don't think she, well, whatever. I can't remember if when she came up, we realized we remembered each other or not from that other thing, but that's not important. Anyway, so she says that she, you know, heard about my products, or she already knew about them or whatever, and that she was in charge of sort of like selecting some people to be on this, one of the news channels. So we're talking and, you know, we're being really friendly and everything. And then she said, well, so if I were to come by, you know, cause she wanted to hear the pedals and everything. And she's like, oh, okay, that's cool. That's cool. And she's like, so who's going to be the one on camera? And I was like, well, I am. And she's like, oh, well, what is the stuttering? Is that going to interfere with that? Like, she just asked me point blank, which I actually appreciate. I said, well, no. I mean, it's certainly, you know, I'm comfortable with it. And I think that other people are. I said, you know, I represent my company a lot. And, you know, but it was weird, kind of. And then she was like, okay. And then she just walked away. And then I looked at my two employees and I was like, did that just happen? And they were like, yep. And I was like, weird. Yep. I'm like, that hasn't happened to me. I can't remember the last time anything like that has happened to me. Or I probably can remember the last time something like that has happened to me. It's just been a while. So I kind of forgot about it, but then it kept popping up in my head. Like, that was weird. Like, should I do something about that? Like, should I follow up? And one thing I still do in the stuttering community is I lead a support group for college age students at the University of Minnesota, but then also I co-lead a Twist chapter at the University of Minnesota. So I asked the Twist chapter, and that's an awesome group of teens. I told them the story, and I'm like, you know, should I follow up with this woman or should I just let it go? And I said, to be honest, I'm kind of leaning towards letting it go because I'm not that worried about it, but I have to be honest that I kind of keep thinking about it every once in a while. And they're like, definitely follow up. Do it. And I was like, okay. So then the next day I wrote her an email and she wrote this thing back and it was like, you know, I don't think I said this at the time, but it was a live broadcast and you'd have to wake up really early. And then, you know, there's not a lot of time. So a lot of people are surprised by, you know, the small amount of time that you have. So, you know, I didn't want to have to cut you off or if there's breaking the news or something like that, I didn't want to put you in a situation where you didn't have enough time to, you know, to talk about the stuff you needed to talk about. Huh. And then, so I thought about it for a while and I was like, you know, what it sounds like, well, I understand where you're coming from. What it sounds like you were trying to do was look out for me and look out for my feelings, but I actually don't need anyone to do that for me.
Yeah.
And again, I appreciate it, but I think if you just would have communicated to me those concerns that you had, I would have been perfectly capable of communicating what I needed to in the time allotted. And it might be true of another person who stutters that they may not have wanted that opportunity, but for me, I would have liked to have that opportunity, and I think I would have performed, you know, in a way that I would have been a capable communicator in that situation. But, you know, she sort of judged, and I don't know if everything she said to me is true, but that's what happened, and I think she's nice, and I think she didn't mean anything malicious by it or anything like that, but it was just kind of a crappy thing that happened to me.
Yeah.
I feel like you dealt with that so well, though. Like, you somehow didn't get mad at her. And really, like, it seems like you were able to voice that, while it was a nice thing that she was trying to do, that you don't need her help.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. I mean, it sucks that it went down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like you should be really, really proud of yourself of how you dealt with that.
Well, thanks. It's the Twist kids, you know. They could tell that I needed
like, come
to
on, man.
Follow up. And actually, the reason I brought it up, because I was inspired by one of the young women in the group who had – she's, you know, very outgoing and likes to participate in class. But she had a teacher who assumed she didn't want to be called on.
Huh.
And she was, you know, very bothered by that. So you have, you know, certain people who think they're doing you a favor, but they're not. You know, we're capable of doing these things and taking care of ourselves. And I think it doesn't necessarily come from a bad or malicious place, but it's still really frustrating.
Yeah. And it speaks to, like, she's just one person, but the story doesn't surprise me. And it speaks to, like you were saying, like our conversation kind of led into this. Like, if she thinks that from your perspective, you have a problem that, mm-hmm. that you would rather not have, and that you need to hide, then her form of protecting you is to silence you.
Yeah.
Versus, like, if she was faced with the fact, like, I'm just different, and if you don't tolerate the difference, or if you whatever, then there are a lot of words you could apply to her that she wouldn't want to apply to her. that she would do anything to avoid that, to avoid thinking that I'm, you know, silencing someone because they're different.
Yeah.
So it's just stigma.
Yeah. I that would have been a good workshop for me to attend at the NSA. But I think I did. I think I did reduce stigma. So now if that ever happens again, you know, she'll maybe approach it. Maybe it's not even a person who stutters.
Yeah.
So I feel good about it. I'm glad that the kids in the Twist chapter, you know, suggested that I do that. I will say also, like, to her credit, I was glad that she just brought it up, kind of, because I think a lot of people would have just said okay and not brought it up. And then so to me it was pretty clear that there was an issue there, and then we could have the conversation because she brought it up.
Yeah, because then you have an ability to defend versus, like, silent discrimination where you just don't even know and you just say, well, you know, and you kind of give the person the benefit of the doubt, but you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think probably would have been a easy thing for you to do.
Yeah. And I probably
just sort of like, you didn't really hear from her and sort of just, I don't know what she thought, but.
Yeah. It was a little off because she seemed really excited about the stuff, you know, and then. All of a sudden, not. When I said that I, the stuttering man would be the one on the camera.
Like, this is going to be a short segment. It's a little too early for you to wake up. I want you to get 8 hours sleep. Maybe well rested. You have a young child at home. She really started to look out for you.
Well, all those things are probably true. But
yes, right.
Yeah, but also, like, weird to say.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm excited the next Twist meeting that we have to. I think it was a positive outcome.
Yeah,
yeah,
I think that it was. I mean, even if it didn't end the way that you wanted it to end, we can't really control like what she does. But I think, like, you did everything that you could on your part.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a little bit hopeful that maybe there'll be something in the future that comes up that'll be good for my company that she'll include me on because she feels bad.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Any luck.
With any luck, she feels terrible.
Yeah. try to set things right with free publicity. Anyway. All right. Well, we should probably wrap up here.
It was really nice to talk to you, yeah. to you guys. It's been it much was. Too long.
Mm-hmm. It was nice.
Well, you guys, we got to just make it happen more often. It's not that hard to.
It's really not. Yeah. I think we can definitely do at least monthly. We just have to maybe make it happen. That'll be a lot easier now that I'm out of school.
Okay.
I promise.
All right.
Get that easier. Say hi to Kelly and Chase.
Yes, please.
Right on. They'll be happy to hear that.
Is he talking now?
Yeah, he says. I mean, he's learning a lot of words right now.
That's so cute.
Yeah,
I just like he is really, really cute. Oh, yeah. It's just not fair.
I just
that one kid could be that cute.
I just want to eat him. It's really hard. I just want to squeeze him. I just want to kiss him all the time too, and it's like, man, I gotta back off. Like, he's busy, you know. He's got like trucks to play with and stuff to do.
That's amazing. Can't help it, though. He's busy. Okay, yeah. Well, and George, your did dinner, and Karen, I will talk to you soon as well.
Sounds good.
I wish you well. Bye, bye, guys.
See ya. Bye.